If you're looking to maximize your fundraising efforts, DonorBox's online donation platform is designed to help you reach your fundraising goals with ease. Discover the world of simplified, seamless fundraising at DonorBox.org. DonorBox, helping you help others.
Welcome back to the Nonprofit Hub podcast. I'm your host, Megan Spear, and along with me today is one of my very best friends in the industry, and I'm excited to have Brad on the podcast. Brad Davies is the vice president of Salem Cultivate and has more industry knowledge on especially digital donor acquisition, and that's what we're going to talk about today. Brad, this is a topic you and I have gone back and forth on for probably a decade at this point.
We have.
All on multiple different fronts. So I'm excited.
All the types.
All different types. So I'm excited to dig into this with you today. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. It's fantastic to be here, Megan.
So tell me a little bit, or tell the audience a little bit about Salem Cultivate and who you are and kind of what you do before we dig into how to do it well.
Yeah. Salem Media Group is who I work for. We're pretty much the largest Christian media company in the US. So we have 99 radio stations. We have a lot of some of the biggest Christian brands online. We have conservative talk and preaching, teach and talk. So there's a lot of different pieces, but mainly we aggregate politically conservative as well as Christian audience. What I do is cultivate is I make sure, I describe it as I help people get the maximum value out of the media that they get or have access to with Salem. And so we work with them to make sure they get the right message to the right group and then work those through to they are getting leads, if they're getting donors, and try to make all that go super successfully. So I act a bit like an internal agency within the media company to make it all go great. And it's been fun. It's been super fun. As Megan, as you know, I've run my own agency. I've worked for other agencies. Now working with a media company, I've been in all the seats around the boardroom table. Been a nonprofit myself, and so this is kind of a combination of all those roles now. And so I usually think like I'm the executive director of a small nonprofit. What would I need? What would I want in order to make this successful? And so that's kind of where my heart is.
I love that. Okay, so we have had a number of guests on the podcast so far this season who have talked about all of the various elements of donor segmentation and understanding your donors and donor retention and all of those things. But none of those things can happen if, in fact, you don't have a strategy alongside it to keep bringing in new donors, right? You can't retain what you don't have. So in this particular day and age, right, we're constantly, there's so many options for feeding that top funnel, right? We have all sorts of pieces of that. And then all of the strategies that we've talked about so far on the podcast can come into play. But today we're really going to focus on pouring into that top line funnel and talk about donor acquisition on a digital standpoint. So there are a million different options at this point. We can through social media, through email, through web banners, through et cetera, et cetera. Talk to me about some of the trends that you're seeing in digital right now and what somebody's best bet is for getting started in digital acquisition.
Yeah. So the trend is media costs are going up, and that's a bummer for everyone. You know, Facebook's leads are not as cheap as they used to be. Banners, email rentals, all the things have gone up in price along with butter and eggs and the other inflationary things we're seeing. So that's harder. And so it makes it so you have to be better at what you're doing in terms of acquisition. So if you're just starting out, the best way to acquire people is to talk about what you do to your friends and family, is to, you know, not try to like go big on social media, but more have events and just cultivate folks that already have a connection to what you do or a connection to the cause and just, you know, spread it that way. Eventually you get to a point where you're out of, you know, connections that make sense. And so you have to go much wider. And so when you're looking at that, you know, the thing with acquisition is you're kind of dating a lot of people at once. And so you got to put your best foot forward. And so sometimes I even like say, hey, before we do this big digital thing, let's look at our website. Let's make sure we're proud of the way the website looks like. Because if we like say, hey, come check us out, and they get there, like, ooh, this is not what I thought it was, right?
Yeah.
That's a problem that stops it. So acquisition, you know, is kind of way down the line in terms of your public facing persona. But if we'll just assume all those things are in place and you feel good about it, you have ongoing communications, you know how to communicate and you want to communicate to people going forward. So then we're to the acquisition part. So what we're looking for is how do we add value to people in their lives that make them want to connect and or at least have a dotted line connection back to the charity. So when we talk about this, it's all about, okay, what's the offer? We like digital offers. We don't like to do physical premiums because there's a lot of cost there. So we like digital offers and we like things that are very practical. So, you know, if it's, if you're we deal with a lot of teaching ministries or on TV or radio. So we say, hey, what's a resource that will help people grow in their faith? And let's be very tangible in terms of, if you read this, you will come away with these things. That works. You know, it's very bottom shelf. People can really get their mind around, okay, I know what I'm getting with this and there's going to be an outcome that I'm excited about. That's great. It becomes a little harder if you're, okay, we feed children internationally. Okay, what's that look like? What's our offer then to an audience? So it might be, well, here's how you can disciple the children in your lives if you're a faith-based nonprofit, or here's, you know, ways that you can encourage great emotional intelligence within your children, right? So it's a little bit of a step away from feeding kids, but also if you're a ministry that's dealing with a lot of kids in a situation, it makes sense like that you would have some expertise in talking about building emotional intelligence. Or how about even more simply, here are 10 meals that, you know, are great nutritionally and that kids will love and are fun to get with if you, you know, feed kids. And so you want something that's tangible, that works, that's digital in order for acquisition to work. And then you can put it a lot of places. You can put it on your Facebook page. You can put it on X or Instagram or all these other channels, but anymore, those are all pay-to-play channels, right? So you have to spend money to gather audience. But you want to find, at least it starts with an offer that's compelling, that people want, that they are willing to raise their hand and say, yeah, I'll give you my email address, even though I know that means you're going to send me more stuff. You're going to be in my inbox more. That's another thing I have to delete or deal with now. But it's like, nope, the value is strong enough that I want to sign up for that. And that's the key, is a great offer that can work. And oftentimes I think people have good offers, they have ideas around great offers. They just need to work them harder or think about, you know, what's, if someone gets this, what's their payoff? What's their benefit? And if we really emphasize that, you're going to have something that's compelling that people are going to want. And then you're starting to, you know, you're on your way to building an acquisition program that's going to work for you, I think, long-term, and it'll be sustainable.
I love that. So when we talk about kind of the offer, right, it's, to your point, it's really easy to know what that is if you have a content-based ministry or a content-based organization. So for some of our cause-based folks, I like the idea of like something that relates to it. Are you seeing, you know, I've seen personally, I've gotten ads for, you know, this ebook about fill in the blank topic. And I've also seen ones for, you know, an exclusive podcast series, an exclusive web series, an exclusive email or YouTube channel, like with behind the scenes pieces. Do you have a preference one over the other?
I have a preference given who the audience I'm responsible for giving for, but sure. In general, I don't. As okay. long as it works, as long as it connects with the audience you care about and it brings value to them, it's either a topic that's tangential to you that you think, oh, they will care about this because we know they care about this, or something that's directly like, oh, this makes sense why they would tell me about this or why they try to give me this. You can go either way. It's just really about knowing your audience. They're like, oh yeah, they want this. I know it because I talk to them and they say, hey, do you have something on this? Or can you produce a resource around this? So yeah. I think you can go either way. I think the key, though, to take the next question or the next level is when you're hone in on what that resource is to, I call, work it harder. And so don't just stop when it's like, oh, yeah, we're getting traction on this one offer. Okay, good. Then it's, you know, how do we keep improving it and change the headline, the subheadline, the title? Are we talking about it in the right way that's attracting the right kind of folks? It's one thing to have an offer. It's another thing to have a very successful offer. And it takes time and effort and energy I think, to get there. And oftentimes I see people stop short of that. They get something that kind of works and they run with it. And my advice or my input is always work it harder. Keep it, keep evolving on it, keep grinding on it. Do you have something that's really, really working well? Because you're going to have to, with the cost of media, you have to have something that really performs well in order for it to ROI or start to make sense when you look at your cost structure.
Okay, that's a great segue, because I know a number of times so far this year, you have been speaking at conferences on this very topic. And one of the phrases that you keep using, right, is the idea between launching a campaign and building a campaign. One of them, it seems like you would like to just get rid of, and one of them you're fully behind. So talk to me a little bit about those differences and why that's important.
Yeah. You know, in the language, if you've been a nonprofit, it's like, oh, we're going to launch this campaign in June or whatever it might be. And it totally makes sense. It means, you know, that's the deadline and here we go. But I like to say, you know, once you launch it and press go, and often what happens is no one touches it again. It's off into the wild in the wild blue yonder. Who knows what's going to happen then, right?
Yeah.
And what happens there is if you don't get it right, you know, there's no going back. There's no pulling that thing back in to tweak, you know, the landing gear at this point, right? It's gone. And I think that's the wrong mentality. I think nonprofits, to be successful and create sustainable campaigns, have to build, right? You're still going up, but you're able to tweak and improve and adjust all the way along. You want a lot of shots at this. You want a lot of reps. You want a lot of learnings in the process. You don't want to just say, okay, this is our best guess and let's send it off. Because when I do this presentation, oftentimes I put this one example in front of people and I say, hey, pick which one you think is going to work best. And these are professionals. Oftentimes they're seasoned writers and they all have various good reasons why they pick one of the different variations. And they're always surprised at which one wins. And I go, that's the point. The point is you can't get this. It's hard to get this right out of the box. So don't even try. Just get moving. Get the stuff out there, get the feedback, get the clicks, get the, you know, the interactions, and then you can build on that. That's much better than say, nope, this is our offer. This is the headline. Send it, right? That's going to be problematic because you can't pull back. And so I really like the metaphor of building campaigns, not launching them. And I think if you take that building mindset into acquisition, you're going to be much better off. Everything's a little bit of a test measure change, little addition, or, you know, the next kind of layer of mortar, as it were. That's a better way to go about to be successful than it is to say, okay, that's it, on to the next thing. And that's what's hard, is there's this wheel spinning behind nonprofits. There's so much to do. And so it's just on to the next thing. And I completely understand that. But if a campaign's important to the organization, if an organization's success or future revenue depends on this campaign being successful, then we have to keep coming back to it and work on it. And it's something we can't just send it in the wild and hope it performs. We have to kind of nurture it and care for it and learn from it to be successful. And oftentimes that doesn't happen. We either don't create the margin to come back to something, or we're just too busy to deal with it. And I think that's a miss. I think it'd be better to do less and do campaigns or a campaign well, meaning coming back to it a lot, and then would it be to launch six campaigns that you never touch? Because they're all going to be, you know, some of marginal results. Oftentimes it takes us 2, 3, 4, 6 months to get a campaign to where it's sustainable and has legs. That's a lot of work for 6 months. And in fact, if you were to come to me and say, hey, we're a month into it, how is it? I'm like, it's not good. Like, we got work to do. They're like, full stop, I'm out, right? Take my ball and going home. But if you go on a journey and say, okay, but here's what we're learning. Here's what we validated in terms of this doesn't work, or this language doesn't work, or this offer's not working as well as it needs to. And then we go, great, what's the next iteration of this? What's the next phase? What else can we try? You're going to end up in a better spot. So yeah, build, don't launch.
Elevate your fundraising strategy effortlessly with DonorBox, the online fundraising platform that streamlines your operations, amplifies donations, and delivers a user-friendly experience for your supporters. Design captivating donation forms, accept digital wallet payments, seamlessly monitor donations, and automate receipt generation. Joining is a breeze with no setup or monthly fees. From customizable donation forms and 4 times faster ultra-swift checkout to seamless in-person giving with DonorBox Live Kiosk, DonorBox makes giving simple and fast for your donors. Visit DonorBox.org and unlock your full fundraising potential today.
I'm going to play devil's advocate for like 1 second because I have sat in the seat as the, you know, the communication and marketing director for a nonprofit. Right. And so you have, whether it's the executive director, the CEO, someone on the board, a whole group on the board who are going, okay, we did this thing, just basically justify your existence, right? Like, show us that you're doing things that are working. I struggle, I think, with maybe the timeline on that, right? Because they are, nonprofit folks are working with such limited resources a lot of the times that it can be hard for boards or executive directors to justify 6 months that way. So is there an ideal timeline? You know, is a week enough to start tweaking the data? Is that too little? Is there, like, what would the ideal timeline look like?
Yeah. Very good question. And that's the reality, right? I have to justify this, or everyone's eyes are on this and it has to be successful, or I have to, you know, show progress. And I think the emphasis there is progress, right? And so oftentimes when we're starting off engagements, I say, here's the deal. We will not get this right out of the gate. It's going to take tweaking, all right? Let's all admit that, you know, we don't know everything and it's going to take work to get there, but we're committed to doing that work, right? So let's get that buy-in. Let's not buy in on the results. Let's buy in on, like, we're going to learn in this process. And then the key thing is, when we are learning, is to tell that story. Here's where we started. Here's our initial assumptions. Here's what we thought would happen. And here's what ended up happening. But it's good. Either good or bad, it's good to know. Because now it's, I used to talk about it, that's a rock we can put in our sack. And it comes with us now, right? It's a little knowledge rock we get to carry along going forward. So then the next month, we're not going to make that mistake again. We're going to take that rock and build upon it. And we're going to say, okay, we tried that once. It didn't work. So back to the question, okay, how do you know when to change? How do you know when to pivot? And that is a skill. That's a, you know, kind of blood, sweat, and tears, you know, time in the factory to figure that out. So at minimum, I like to have at least 100 people see something or click something or respond to something before we ever even touch it to know what do we have here, right? So you have to allow it, some of it, to go. The hardest part for small nonprofits, especially around campaigns, is do they have enough traffic or eyeballs or impressions to make sense of what's happening? Or do we have a winner or a loser? It's hard to even know. But you want, is kind of when you're thinking through the campaign, you want 100, 500 responses before you start to do. Now, a response doesn't mean a donation, but a response means at least a click. At least means, like, did someone view it and say, nope, not for me? So that we know, okay, there's enough going on here that this is working or it's not working. The harder part I always find is, okay, great, we know it is. Okay, now what do we change though? Like, what's the biggest change we can make to get us the furthest ahead? And that takes a little bit of doing and some experience, but oftentimes it's just engagement. Can we get people to engage around this? That's the biggest hurdle. If you can get people to engage, then you can start to point them in different directions. So, I mean, we can talk through that more, but I think you need 100 to 500 engagements, clicks, you know, verified people looking at something to start to know, okay, now let's reevaluate.
No, I think that's great. So I like the idea of it not being a measure of time necessarily, but of actual functionality. I think that's a lot easier to justify to folks.
Yeah. And then you're spending money to maybe drive traffic through something. And then you say, okay, we can stop the spend because we got 5,000, you know, we got 1,000 people through it and not, you know, we got 100 clicks on it now. And now we know, okay, that's not working. Okay, great. Let's retool before we go spend more money. Oftentimes people just spend money on things that aren't working anyways and hope they get better. Well, that really goes bad and then you're in trouble.
Yeah. So as that process is kind of playing out, right, obviously the ultimate goal, right, would be that this campaign drives a ton of revenue, brings in a ton of donations, even if they're small, like it builds a mass audience, brings in people. But are there other metrics that people should be paying attention to in evaluating whether a campaign is working or not?
Yeah, great question. So the other metrics I have is you want to have feedback loops. You want to have natural ways that you're understanding, even if it's not hitting our ultimate objective, what are the micro wins or the micro kind of KPIs that are telling us we're on the right track or not? So my two best tactics for creating those feedback loops is first is a survey. So we like to include a survey wherever possible when we're attracting new folks to an organization. And we ask them some very basic demographic info and then also some more very stuff that we benefit from that we also, though we couch it in a way that it's going to be a benefit for the user who's telling us. And we like open-ended responses. And so, for example, we ask age and gender. We ask, you know, do you have kids in your house or not? That helps us understand, okay, macro themes in terms of parenting or not, or, you know, imagery for who's the audience and making sure that the tribe that we're going after is represented in the imagery in terms of who's going through the process. But then we say, you know, would you like to know more about these topics that we talk about? And they start to tell you, and they're like, okay, good. We're attracting the right kind of people or we're not. And so let's go back and change in the offer. Then with the open-ended questions, this has gotten a lot easier thanks to AI, is we take all these open-ended question responses and we let AI summarize them for us and give us kind of macro themes and give us examples. And that way we're taking everything that the audience is saying in their own language and then being able to like kind of categorize it and summarize it in a way that's like, okay, this is really helpful. It's very actionable for us to say, okay, we talk about, you know, homelessness this way, but our audience refers to it this way. Well, let's match that language, right? But you don't get that unless you ask an open-ended response to be able to hear what people are doing. So surveys are awesome for helping you understand, okay, are we on the right track? The other thing is when you are acquiring new folks to an organization or if you're acquiring leads, you really want to watch what the downstream engagement is from their first. We use a welcome series, an email welcome series, usually 4 to 6 emails right after they sign up for something. We want to see, okay, are they opening and are they clicking? And not just like little clicks, like are we getting 40, 50, 60% of those folks that just acquired to click into it? If we are, we're on to something. If it's below that, we know because we've done this enough, we don't have the right follow-up offers for this audience to engage them. That's going to be a problem. So then we go back and change the initial offer or we change what we talk to them about all the way along. But you need those feedback loops to tell you, okay, are we on track or not? And a survey and then just really watching closely, the follow-up interaction really helps you dial that in. And those are crucial to having kind of successful acquisition campaigns.
Yeah, and that's part of the build, right? This is not, if you just launch it, there's no, you know, toss it to the back burner. There's no process for that to actually learn from it. So I think that's a good call out. I do want to circle back though to one thing that you had said earlier. Because you had referenced email rentals, and this is a big topic of debate for a lot of folks, is buying email addresses or renting email addresses, is it worth it? Because our inboxes are so oversaturated, is that still worth the value? What do you think about that?
Yeah. So the value has decreased, or the response from rented lists has decreased. It's across the board. We're seeing lower open rates, lower quick click rates in general compared to 6 months ago and for sure 3 or 4 years ago. So it still works though for some groups. They can still make it work, but they don't start there. Right? They're not starting with an expensive email rental with this, you know, tried and true offer. They're starting low, you know, with Facebook. They're starting with their own list. They're starting with limited display ad campaigns or, you know, stuff through Google. That's how they start to build the confidence to know, okay, we have something that's working. Now we can really push it forward. And that's where email rentals come in. And even with them, I say, if you can only afford to rent the list once, don't. You need multiple takes at this. You're going to learn, is this the right subject line and pre-header or is it over here? And so you, even when you rent the list, you still want to be testing stuff. You still want to be testing your assumptions. And so, you know, I don't really let people rent the list once. I'll let them run it 4 times because by the 4th one, I know we can be in a situation where we're going to be on the way or at, you know, measuring out the KPIs that we need. If I just have one shot at it and it, you know, there's a lot riding on it, then I'm real hesitant. I don't like that because I don't think I can win, but I can win if I A/B test 4 times into a process, into an offer that is attractive to this audience and works for this organization. So back to it, it can work, but it needs to be something that is tried and true and something you've tested into. It's not where you start. If you're starting there, you're going to run through a lot of budget very quickly with little to show it for it.
Yeah. A few weeks ago, we had our friend Nils Smith was on the podcast. And, you know, nice. Nils is always like 10 steps ahead of all of us in terms of what's going on out there. But we were talking, he and I, specifically about AI and about some of the ways that nonprofits can leverage that to just make tasks easier, take tasks off their plate. And so you had talked about that with kind of some of the analyzing of data. Is mm-hmm. there a specific tool that you like for that? Is there a process that you guys go through? I ask because in general, nonprofits tend to not be like right on the cutting edge of all things technology, right? And so I think there's still a lot of misconception out there about what AI can do, but this sounds like a pretty practical task and a pretty tangible way to help a campaign. How would someone go about doing that?
So I have several AI tools that I'm using actively. I have a paid, you know, plan with ChatGPT. I also pay for a service called Magi, which is actually aggregates a lot of different large language models. And then one of the cool things about Magi is it says, hey, let us pick the tool given whatever the prompt is. And so, you know, certain tools, you know, Gemini can do better than others on some of the stuff. And ChatGPT is better at this than, you know, some of the other ones that are out there. And so the tool then tells me and I try it. So where we're using AI heavily is as a co-writer or an editor for me. So we'll have a headline or an idea for a subject line, and we'll ask the engine, the prompt will be, give me 10 variations of this subject line with this persona in mind to generate new ideas, right? So it's just coming at it differently than I would have.
Yeah.
And so it's just, I use it as idea generator. And then I'm like, oh, that's really good. And then if you really want to get skilled, ask the AI to say, okay, which one do you think will do best and why? And it'll give you that rationale, which then helps you to think, oh, wow, they're really emphasizing urgency. Well, I don't love that subject line, but how do we add urgency? And then we just kind of go through the process again, rechange the initial subject line, and then ask for 10 variations again. So that's a great way to use AI that's not using it heavily to write, but it's using it as a kind of a creative co-creator on stuff. The other thing I mentioned with the survey is AI is great at taking a lot of data and summarizing it. And so we throw PDFs in there all the time and say, give me a 100 word description of this 50 page PDF that, you know, would be attractive for this type of a user. That's a great uses of AI. It's not asking it to create, it's asking it to condense everything down and position it in front of this kind of a person. And then we use that for these open-ended survey responses. We say, hey, take all these responses, categorize them on similar sentiment and content, and then tell me, you know, whichever has the most responses, list that first and give me examples of what's in this. And so that's another awesome use of AI. One kind of example of this is I used to go through these open-ended responses myself personally. And it was so depressing because the topic was heavy and we were talking about, you know, what are the challenges you're facing in your life? And people are describing chronic health issues and broken relationships and just a lot of pain and suffering.
Yeah.
And I'm reading through all this because I'm trying to get a sense for what are these people facing and can we change the offers or change the communication to better relate to them? And it was heavy, heavy stuff. I'd do it for an hour and I have to go for a walk because I was like, oh, this is so much. You know, I know, you know, with your operators, I would think the same thing, right? When they talk about prayer requests and they're dealing with so many people, it can be heavy. AI helps lighten that load because it helps me, it still gets me the content I need, but it does all that hour long work for me in seconds and helps me to kind of better even codify what are the things that are similar and you know, the macro themes that we can then pull out and start to address in the acquisition, in the follow-up, maybe in future offers that we create. So I hope that's helpful. That's how I'm using AI right now.
Great.
It'll evolve. Even to mention a platform now feels like it's going to date it because, you know, next month is, you know, a whole new world in AI.
Changes somewhere.
But that's how we're doing it now. Yeah.
Okay. That's great. So One last question as we kind of wrap it up here. Let's say somebody is brand new to like a donor development, donor relations kind of role, and they have been tasked with they have been tasked with building a donor acquisition strategy. If you had to tell them, hey, this is the one thing that you have to keep in mind, the most important piece of a donor acquisition strategy, what is it? What would you tell them?
Yeah. It's creating something of value for the donors or future donors. And that can look differently, but a lot of times organizations are so caught up in the cause and what they specifically do. They think everyone else is interested in it, and they are to an extent, but they're like, oh, look at this awesome new way that we're approaching poverty relief in this area. And that's fascinating to them and to experts. But for the donor, if it doesn't like enhance their life somehow, it can like intellectually, but that doesn't mean it's going to be great. It means like, how do you help me today where I'm at? And that can be the hard work to understand, okay, what's the right type of offer or right thing to communicate to these people that would interest them? But if you keep that in mind, it's like, even if it's this dynamic new approach to how you're going to fulfill your mission, how do you draw that down into how it impacts someone today where they're at on a Friday morning? That's where it's going to be key. That's the key thing. You have to figure that out. And once you can figure that out, you can kind of expand on it and grow on it and put it out for feedback and get it back and keep evolving it. But it's got to impact people's lives. If it's too theoretical or like heady, it doesn't work. It's got to change people where they're at, improve their life, make their life easier, improve some aspects of their relationships, whatever that might be. That's key. And you got to figure that out. So that would be my one tip, is figure out the value proposition for your future donor, current donor, and then you're onto something.
I love that. Thank you so much. Again, my guest today has been Brad Davies, who's the vice president of Salem Cultivate. Brad, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate having you here, and we will see you next time on the Nonprofit Hub podcast.
Thanks, Megan.